is crushed to center field and gone. That is 12 RBIs for Bobby Witt Jr. on this homestand.
And believe it or not, the Royals are the hottest team in Major League Baseball. They win their sixth in a row yesterday, completing a sweep of the Mets. The final, the Boys in Blue 9, the Mets 2, highlighted by Bobby Witt Jr. again, as that was his 19th home of the season. He's red hot. He added his 31st stolen base of the year. On the day, Witt Jr. went 3-for-4 with a home run, 2 runs scored, and 2 RBIs. Welcome to Sports Ticket, where we've got breaking news we're going to get to here in a little bit about conference realignment. It is just a constant... I can't even come up with the words anymore to describe it. It's just absolutely pandemonium when it comes to trying to figure out the musical chairs that is conference realignment. And we got some breaking news coming up here in just a little bit. But we're going to talk about the Royals for a moment. The Royals completed a perfect 6-0 homestand. First time they've done that since 2016 with the win yesterday. Bobby Witt Jr. over the last 6 games is hitting .555. 15 for 27, 3 homers, 13 RBIs, 3 stolen bases. He did that over the homestand. He is now 1 home run shy of becoming the first player in Major League Baseball history to record at least 20 homers and 30 steals in each of his first 2 big league seasons. And yet there were people a few months ago, believe it or not, in Kansas City saying, well, we should be thinking about trading Bobby Witt Jr. to get some pieces. It's like, dude, you don't trade a young possible superstar and give up that quickly. It's ridiculous. And it's thankfully, these people in the media and fans aren't in charge of the organization. Drew Waters, a 3-run homer, his 6th of the season, gave the Royals a 6-0 lead in the 7th, and that was plenty of support for Brady Singer, who was outstanding. He went 8 innings, allowing no runs and just 3 hits. He's 7-8 on the year. Mets avoided being shut out in back-to-back games thanks to a 2-run homer in the top of the 9th for Francisco Lindor off of Royals reliever Jonathan Heasley. The Royals starting pitching during the 6-game win streak, and this is what we'll be talking about for a very long time. Even in spring training, we were talking about if the Royals are going to be a contender, they got to find starting pitching. You're only as good as your starting rotation. The Royals starting pitchers during the 6-game winning streak have an ERA of 1.75, 5 walks, 34 strikeouts, and they've given up just 7 runs in 36 innings. Royals go for their 7th straight victory tonight at 6:05. They start a 3-game set in Philadelphia to take on the Phillies, who are in the midst of a playoff race. They're 59-50. Jordan Lyles, 2-12, ERA of 6.15, starts for the Royals as they take their winning streak on the road, trying to get win number 7 in a row.
Harris passes back toward KJ. Wow! Cocks it back behind his head with a two-hand rim rocker. A ferocious flush from KJ Adams.
He had to kind of move his head so he didn't hit it on the rim.
KJ Adams with a dunk is a KU men's basketball team who could be the number 1 team in the country when the preseason rankings come out later this fall. Started a series of 3 exhibition games at Puerto Rico yesterday afternoon, a game you could have heard on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas. KU debuted many new faces, and they have their regulars. DeJuan Harris certainly is one of those. KJ Adams, Kevin McCuller. KU rolled to a 106-71 win over the Puerto Rico select team. Texas transfer Arterio Morris led the way, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. KJ Adams with 19 points. KU made 42% of their 3-point attempts in a game that they led 54-34 at halftime. Bill Self, back on the sidelines for KU, assessed his team's performance.
Yeah, I actually thought we played pretty well, you know, obviously early. We got out and they couldn't get a shot off, and we did a good job in a lot of respects defensively early. Then after that, we really didn't guard anybody. But we haven't really worked on a lot of things defensively. We've done some things offensively, but I thought we shared it. I thought the ball moved for the most part. We missed a lot of layup opportunities where we had easy shots that I think normally we'd make. And, you know, we're not going to normally get that many points in transition off misses, but we did a really good job of playing fast and getting out and running. And, you know, we saw flashes of what El Marco and Arterio and those guys could be, but you know, when you really look at it, KJ Adams and Kevin McCuller were, you know, as rock solid as anybody. And
So the Jayhawks win easily, but they'll be tested coming up tomorrow against the Bahamian national team. They play two games against the Bahamian national team in Puerto Rico, and there's a chance there's some NBA players that will be on that team. KU will play tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., pregame at 10:30, and then Monday at 4 o'clock, pregame at 3:30. And as long as we get the transmitter back up and going, you'll be able to hear the KU Jayhawks exhibition games at Puerto Rico tomorrow and Monday on Z96.3 The Lake. Guess what? Football's back! The NFL preseason began last night with the Browns defeating the Jets 21-16 in the Hall of Fame game in Canton Hall, Ohio. Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson did not play. But hey, it was football, right? The Chiefs continued training camp yesterday in pads as they near closer to their preseason opener coming up next Sunday, August 13th in New Orleans to take on the Saints. Nick Bolton, Mike Edwards, Deion Bush had interceptions to highlight the day that featured 7-on-7, 9-on-7, and 11-on-11 drills. One of the state agencies involved in the ongoing investigation of alleged sports wagering violations by Iowa and Iowa State athletes announced yesterday no evidence had been discovered to suggest the outcome of any contest involving the schools was affected by gambling interest. In other words, they're saying that they have no evidence to prove that these players fixed any of the games. A total of 7 current or former athletes at the two schools were criminally charged this week, notably Iowa State starting quarterback Hunter Deckers and ex-Iowa basketball player Aaron Eulis. All 7 are charged with tampering with records, and all are suspected of placing bets on contests involving their own schools. 4 are alleged to have wagered on games involving their own teams. The 7 athletes are suspected of combining for more than 5,000 wagers, totaling more than $100,000, that were placed between January of 2021 through May of 2023, just a few months ago. In addition to facing criminal charges, those current athletes could forfeit all or part of their remaining eligibility for violating NCAA gambling rules. In a related story, LSU football has a new, more transparent injury reporting policy that head football coach Brian Kelly described as a proactive response to the proliferation of legalized sports betting. For Kelly, one concern is the specter of gamblers hounding football staffs for insider information. And the new LSU policy comes on the heels of those criminal charges I just mentioned against Iowa and Iowa State athletes. And Brian Kelly said, I thought it was important, given the nature of what's going on today out there relative to reporting and gaming. We wanted to make sure that we were transparent with injuries, not putting any pressure on anybody here to guess who's in, who's out for a given game. Kelly said LSU's injury reports will be released twice during the game weeks, just like the NFL or similar to NFL. When we get to Saturday, if somebody's doubtful, we'll give you available or unavailable. Kelly said his staff already had discussed that no one should even have a gaming app on their phone, one reason being that smartphones have geographic locators on them. There shouldn't be any of those apps on any of our players' phones or anyone in this building, said Kelly, which, of course, that would make sense. He also downplayed the possibility that LSU could be at a tactical disadvantage on the field by being more forthcoming about injuries in the days leading up to games. He said the ability to keep opponents in the dark about certain players' availability, he said, is overrated. So there's a policy change by LSU in response to what's happening with sports gambling and college athletes. So there's a domino effect to some of these things, no doubt. All right, so conference realignment. So this was last night. Late last night, this was basically the summary. I'll keep it as simple as I can in regards to last night. So as of late last night, this is what was out there. Arizona's going to the Big 12. Arizona State is reluctant. Their president slowing things down, but they're 95% in. Utah probably will go if Arizona State both go. Big 12 would have 16 schools. Arizona, pretty much a done deal. That would be 14. Arizona State goes 15, Utah 16. Some saying, well, the Big 12 might wait on Arizona State and Utah, maybe hoping that Oregon would come. Oregon, according to somebody, said that they're saying no to the Big 12. The Big 10 was talking with Oregon and Washington. Washington said, listen, we're not going to get a full share of the money that we get with the TV deal by joining the Big 10. If we only get like $30 million a year, we need another $10 million a year dealing with all the travel cost. According to Jason Shear and Chris Cartman of ASU's 24/7 site, Arizona State President Michael Crow being so difficult that he was gumming up the process. They went on to say, yes, most likely Arizona State will end up in the Big 12, but with the school's president being drug along unhappily, which if you're the Big 12, do you want a school that's unhappy joining your conference? No. The Arizona Board of Regents trying to slow walk Arizona official announcement to give Arizona State some more time to get their house in order. So don't expect as quick a turnaround as Colorado's announcement just a week and a half ago. And somebody made a very good point about this in regards to the national media. We know the national media doesn't understand the Midwest. That's easy to know. But this is interesting. There are people out there, they're like, oh my God, the Big 12 is going to kill the Pac-12. And then the Big 10 puts out this BS about how, well, we're reluctant to do anything. We don't want to be the ones that ended the Pac-12, yet you're the ones that took USC and UCLA, their two most noteworthy brands. But somebody put this out there, and I think it's a good point. The SEC poaches Texas A&M from the Big 12. The Big Ten poaches Nebraska from the Big 12. The SEC poaches Missouri from the Big 12. The Pac-12 poaches Colorado from the Big 12. The SEC poaches Texas and Oklahoma, the two biggest brands in the Big 12. The Big Ten poaches USC and UCLA from the Pac-12. And the media conclusion, why is the Big 12 trying to destroy college football? This is so bad and wrong. But yet they didn't say these things when all those other things were happening. It is. It's a contradiction. It's hypocritical. No question. There's validity to that comment that I saw. But now today, it's insane. Today, last night, like I said, it was Arizona's going to the Big 12, pretty much a done deal, according to some reports, heavily leaning there. Arizona State will probably go because Arizona's going, and Utah may follow. And Oregon and Washington could very well go to the Big Ten, especially Oregon. Well. Here we go. So, today, and this is changing by the minute, the Pac-12 has a meeting going on apparently now to discuss its media deal and a signing of a grant of rights. As bleak as things look for the league late last night, numerous sources expect optimism that the Pac-12 can halt most or even all of the schools that were thinking about leaving. What? Multiple sources saying that the Pac-12 meeting this morning to sign a grant of rights remains on schedule. Expectations that all presidents will show up, including Arizona's president. Oregon and Washington's exit from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten appears to have lost momentum overnight. The Pac-12 survival is contingent on keeping intact at least eight of the current nine members, because remember, Colorado's going to the Big 12. A loss of two or more schools, either Arizona and Arizona State to the Big 12 or Oregon, Washington to the Big 10, is seen as a likely recipe for collapse. As Pac-12 leaders enter their meeting, neither has happened. Saw this out there. Are Oregon, Washington, Arizona really going to sign a grant of rights for a conference they were all angling to leave like 6 hours ago? Excellent point. Excellent point. Saw this out there. Why does the Big 12 need Arizona State in Utah? Go ahead and grab Arizona. You're at 14. That's still a healthy number. You got Colorado, Arizona coming in. You wait for the ACC implosion. And then you go for Louisville. Maybe you go for Miami. Clemson, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Pitt, Virginia Tech, call it a day. Evens out the east-west spread of the conference, rivalries all over the conference. That was an idea thrown out there. That would be down the line, of course. But I get it. I think I talked about this yesterday on the show. The Big 12, I don't think, has to rush into making it to where they have 16. If they like Arizona way better than Arizona State and Utah, then take Arizona and then wait. Let it play out. I don't see a problem with that. Then there's this. Breck McMurphy reported 42 minutes ago, at last minute, Pac-12 may stay together and sign grant of rights. Arizona's Bobby Robbins appeared fully committed to Pac-12 so much that one participant said if Arizona leaves, he should win an Oscar. Jason Shear, just a few minutes later, contradicted that and said there's a very real chance that Arizona makes the decision to go alone without Arizona State and Utah to the Big 12. Pac-12 CEO group meeting this morning, intent to sign grant of rights. All nine schools expected to participate in the meeting. Eyes are on Oregon, Washington, Arizona, and Arizona State. Arizona was still planning to go to the Big 12 after last night's meeting. Coaches were informed, and it was full steam ahead. We've always said it's not over till it's over, but it would still be one of the most shocking turnarounds maybe we've ever seen in sports, changing your mind in this situation and having an impact on so many people. I mentioned this, I think, late last week, that I remember when everybody wrote off the Big 12 and said it was dead and buried, and we should learn from that You know, like, we should learn from history in everything that we do in our life, right? We should learn from history. Don't repeat the same mistakes. Don't fall for the same things. And I said it late last week. Dusty and I were talking about it. I said, I'm not going to write off the Pac-12 until they're actually dead. Because everybody thought the Big 12 was dead. And look where they are a year and a half, 2 years later, or even 5 years later. They're actually in pretty decent shape. They're the one adding schools instead of losing schools, here, at least here with Brett Yormark. And so maybe there's a way the Pac-12 can stay together. I didn't seem that, I didn't think it was that logical. I didn't think it was probably going to happen per se, but I threw it out there and said, listen, they could have a merge with the Mountain West. They'd keep their conference alive, salvage something. So maybe the Pac-12 is. Let's see what else we got here. 11 minutes ago, Arizona is doing everything it can to leave. The Arizona Board of Regents wants the schools to be together and has authority. Michael Crow is the guy that is holding this up for Arizona State, it sounds like. So Arizona State is the problem right now for anything moving on. He's the Arizona State president. Sounds like he'd rather stay in the Pac-12. Arizona wants to go. Arizona State is almost like an albatross around Arizona's neck right now. Crow has always preferred the Pac-12 stay together. So that's a little bit of information. What else we got here? Combination of factors going on. True reluctance to kill one of the pillar conferences in college sports. Some Big Ten pushback on what is to be gained by adding more schools like Oregon and Washington. And perhaps an assisting role by the ACC in helping the Pac-12 improve its media rights options. Oregon expected now to stay in the Pac-12, barring an 11th-hour change. That could have the power to keep the league together. Arizona still hasn't finalized the deal with the Big 12, but it does sound like if Arizona left for the Big 12, that if Oregon would stay, that the Pac-12 could maybe salvage something here. We were talking about how the Big 12 doesn't have to take Arizona State or Utah. They don't have to take everybody that wants to get in. Same thing applies to the Big 10. And I said this the other day, actually yesterday, that why is everybody sitting here going the Big 10, the Oregon, and Oregon and Big 10 is inevitable? When, if it was, and the Big 10 wanted Oregon, or Oregon really wanted the Big 10, why isn't it already done? Why wasn't that done when Oregon, or when USC and UCLA went? Wouldn't it have made sense for Oregon to go about that time too? Why are we this far down the road now? And it sounds like Oregon's interested, but the Big 10's kind of like, we'll think about it. Things may be going too fast to where the Big 10 and their presidents say, we don't really want to add anybody right now. Can we wait? Plus, you're not going to get a full share of the media rights revenue if you join the Big Ten, if you're Oregon and Washington, and then more travel costs associated with joining the Big Ten. Whereas Colorado joined the Big 12, and they got a full share, $31.7 million. Now it's being reported Oregon, Washington to the Big Ten has become a coin toss. We got all kinds of things out there that contradict each other. Oregon's not going to the Big Ten. Big Ten is not really as interested as people think. Other reports, 50-50 shot, coin toss at Oregon, Washington, go to the Big Ten. Do any of these guys know? I don't think they do. They're just putting stuff out there, but I'm just giving you what they have. Despite Arizona's deep interest with the Big 12 and the league's acceptance of such, because the Big 12 is all in on bringing Arizona in, the Arizona Board of Regents controls the decision for both Arizona and Arizona State. And once again, Arizona State is dragging their feet, and that's causing problems to where Arizona can't go. What else we got here? See if there's any other new information over the last few minutes. No, about they're having that meeting as we speak. So it's very possible that we talked about the earthquake, possibly of conference realignment. And I said this yesterday. It could be in the next few weeks. It could be over the next 12 months. The Pac-12's media rights deal ends, what is it, July 1 of 2024. So if they don't get a new deal done and agreed upon, then they cease to exist. They got to have a media rights deal. And right now, they don't past this upcoming season. So all the stuff that's been talked about, will we end up just having Colorado and Arizona going to the Big 12 and that's the only changes we have for the time being? Or will we just simply have Colorado leaving and nothing changes and Arizona's stuck in the Pac-12 and they don't really want to be? Hey, your guess is as good as anybody else's right now, including the people covering it on the West Coast and out in Arizona. Because this is, it almost seems to me like there are a few schools that are getting cold feet. And I think the other thing, and I think this is very important to point out, I think this is moving too quickly for people. I think, which is sad, because the Pac-12, they should have been way more proactive where it never got to this point. Which leads me to the final thing that I want to share with you today on the Sports Ticket before we sign off. So there was a very interesting story that was put out there by ESPN. Heather Dinich, I think, put out this story. And I thought it was a very good, solid story. How did the Big 12 change things from where they were and how they were able to get Colorado to leave the Pac-12? And we've talked about this on the show many times. I think Brett Yormark is a genius with the way he's handled things. And by the way, if you're sitting here as a Big 12 person and you really want Arizona to come in and you want Arizona State and Utah to come in, maybe it's a blessing in disguise that they don't join the league to where maybe there's other opportunities for the Big 12 to grab somebody from the ACC down the line here. That might be a better fit. Louisville, I still think, is a fit for the Big 12, but that's just me. So this story details how the Big 12 survived. And it's mainly what we've talked about before on the show. But let's take it in order. Brett Yormark, when he was hired, and this is his one-year anniversary on the job. So in 1 year, he's accomplished a ton. Brett Yormark, Big 12 commissioner's first priority was getting the league's TV deal done. And this is absolutely super critical point of the story and why we are where we are today and why the Pac-12 is in a really wild mess right now. Why there is possible chaos in college sports. It's because the Pac-12 sat on their hands and was reactive. And Brett Yormark, finally the Big 12 got a guy as commissioner to be proactive and be aggressive. And so Brett Yormark came in and said, we gotta open up this window sooner. We got to beat the Pac-12 to the punch. We need a new media rights deal. We don't want to wait till the negotiating window. So he approached ESPN and Fox, did Brett Yormark. And long story short, Brett Yormark landed a six-year, $2.2 billion TV deal with ESPN and Fox that runs through 2031 without Oklahoma and Texas in it. The Big 12 opened its negotiations early, completed its agreement before the Pac-12, and even though the Pac-12's current TV deal ends a year earlier, the Big 12 beat him to the punch. That's called proactivity. The Pac-12's slow process in negotiating its own media rights deal undoubtedly weighed heavily into the process, and that's why we're here today for them. Baylor Athletic Director Mac Rhodes told ESPN the Big 12 was able to flip its position in the national landscape because of two things. The conference announced in September of 2021 that it would add Houston, Central Florida, Cincinnati, and BYU, which helped change the narrative that the league was falling apart. And Brett Yormark was able to negotiate a win-win media rights deal for the league and its media partners before going to market and before the Pac-12. Rhodes goes on to say, we had no leverage because we couldn't go to the open market. The fact we were able to get that done for us, goal number one was stability. Goal number two was finances. Make no mistake, that was the order of priority. If we don't get that done, this is a completely different story. With the TV deal done, early exit plan for OU and Texas in place, plus the assurances of four new schools joining the league, this summer, the Big 12 decision-makers began a deeper dive in the possibility of adding more teams. They discussed UConn, Pac-12 schools, and even the scenario of adding Gonzaga for basketball only. At the Spring Fiesta Summit in Scottsdale, Arizona, where multiple conferences gather on an annual basis for league meetings, representatives from Endeavor presented Big 12 decision-makers with slides of various schools, including Arizona and Arizona State, and evaluations of various TV scenarios. When asked to describe Brett Yarmark's approach behind the scenes, one Big 12 source said, aggressive, and I'm not apologizing for it. He shouldn't. You should not apologize for being aggressive and proactive. You shouldn't. On June, it's either eat or be eaten. And that's what the SEC did. The SEC was aggressive. Texas, Oklahoma were aggressive in talking to the SEC. USC, UCLA, and the Big Ten collectively were aggressive in working out a deal behind the scenes that surprised people. I mean, why is it that Brett Yarmark, who's being probably more transparent than the commissioners, the SEC, and the Big Ten, why is he the big bad bully? Because he's honest with you and not a snake like those other conferences? Like, he's just telling you, we're open for business. All right? Yeah, we're going to survive. We're going to do what we got to do to survive. And these other conferences lie in the weeds and have sneak attacks. Take away OU in Texas, take away USC and UCLA, and yet the Big 12 is the bad guy. What? Because their commissioner actually has the stones to tell you what he's going to do and then does it? I love the man, and I haven't even met him yet. On June 2nd, after Big 12 spring meetings in West Virginia, Yarmark publicly touted the conference as having a plan when it comes to expansion. The athletic directors told Yarmark at that meeting that if the league was going to add another school, their priority was a Power 5 program. The Big 12's presidents and chancellors met after the athletic directors and gave Yarmark the approval that if Colorado wanted to join the Big 12, go ahead and make it happen. The permission was granted to Brett Yarmark from the ADs and presidents and chancellors of the Big 12 to go get Colorado. You have our blessing. And boy, did he deliver. According to Big 12 sources, there was a very close circle that knew Colorado's intentions 3 weeks before it happened, and discussions turned to action about 10 days before the move became official. TCU athletic director Jeremiah Donati said, and I quote, "I think there's a misconception, at least from some schools, that Brett Yarmark is ruthless in his pursuit, and I just don't think it's that way at all. Brett's set a vision and a platform for our conference that's incredibly attractive, candidly, and I think that's ultimately why Colorado decided to come back to the Big 12. I would agree. Of all the schools engulfed in all the speculation of conference realignment, Colorado always made the most sense because of its previous ties to the Big 12. It was a member from 96 to 2010 and the Big 8 for 47 years before that. And the idea of Colorado joining the Big 12 gained further traction with the hire of head coach Deion Sanders, who has yet to coach his first game with the Buffaloes, but has already reignited interest in a program that had no bowl wins and just two winning football seasons since they joined the Pac-12. One Big 12 head coach said, and I quote, "Quite frankly, Deion was pushing for it." It meaning go to the Big 12. Rick George, athletic director, I think, there at Colorado, said he spoke with all of his head coaches about the potential move, but also acknowledged that playing in the Big 12 will align with how Deion Sanders is recruiting. George went on to say, "I will tell you there's tremendous benefits for being in the Big 12 for the direction that Coach Prime is going as it relates to recruiting. Being able to play in Orlando against Central Florida, where he's recruited very heavily. The state of Texas has always been a priority for us, and now playing four teams in that area. I tried to include all of our coaches in this, and Coach Prime certainly and I had conversations about this as well as I did with other coaches." And here's the great thing for Colorado. Colorado's departure coincides with the end of the Pac-12's TV deal, which expires after the 23-24 season this upcoming year, meaning that Colorado doesn't have to pay an exit fee at all. Colorado expected to join the Big 12 on a pro-rata basis, which is an average of $31.7 million in TV revenue per year over the course of the league's new deal starting in 2025. So Colorado, honestly, has played this very well, very well. They don't have to pay an exit fee. They're going to join the Big 12. They're going to get their full share. Whereas Oregon and Washington, if they join the Big 10, probably wouldn't. Not at least not for a little while. And why are we here today? Why are there all kinds of reporters sending out all kinds of conflicting information and everybody seems to be, their head is spinning out of control? Why is there all kinds of talk about the Pac-12 dissolving? And then maybe they're saving it. And then maybe merging with the Mountain West. And then Oregon and Washington going to the Big Ten. And Arizona State, Utah may join Colorado in the Big 12. The reason is a combined state of facts. And there's only two facts that you need. And they coincide and dance together. The reason that we are here today with conference realignment, not conference realignment as a whole, but the reason we are here today in regards to schools thinking about leaving the Pac-12 is twofold. One, Brett Yarmark The new commissioner of the Big 12 a year ago said, we are going to be aggressive. We are going to go to the TV networks who hold all the cards financially, and we are going to push to have the window of negotiating open sooner than what was planned. And we are going to do our best to work out a brand new TV deal that gives us stability through 2031 is how it ended up being. And while Brett Yarmark, the new commissioner of the Big 12, who's never been commissioner of a conference before or anything like that, while Brett Yarmark was doing his job, being aggressive, being proactive, understanding the landscape that he was just freshly into, outplayed, outworked, and flat out kicked the Pac-12's ass. Because the Pac-12, there for a long time, the Big 12 was the laughingstock of the five conferences, wasn't it? Dan Beebe was a horrible commissioner. Bob Bowlesby might have been marginally better. Bob Bowlesby talked about how he didn't see any realignment or conference shakeup happening for a while, and a week later, Texas Oklahoma was gone. He had no idea what the hell was happening. And people were talking about the Pac-12 was going to poach the Big 12. At one point, there was all these stories saying that the Pac-12 was going to take Texas and Oklahoma. I saw the other day that had the Pac-12 just called Texas Tech and said, you want to join the Pac-12, the Texas Tech would have accepted in 10 minutes. That's how dire things were for the Big 12. The Pac-12 had they had the chance to be where the Big 12 is today, maybe even more so, because they had a chance to get Texas, Oklahoma some years ago. They could have just made a few phone calls and probably got another couple of Texas schools. And they sat on their hands. Their presidents were hee-hawed around. They weren't sure. Eventually, the Texas, Oklahoma was like, yeah, maybe not after time. You should have grabbed them. The Pac-12 sat on their hands. The Pac-12, while everybody is doing what they're doing aggressively, the Pac-12 was doing basically, well, they weren't thinking, they weren't forward thinking, they didn't have a vision, and they fell behind the times. And that's what the Big 12 had been doing until one man was hired, and it changed the game. It was a game changer. Brett Yarmark. We could easily be sitting here today. Brett Yarmark was not the commissioner of the Big 12. I truly believe this. If Brett Yarmark was not the commissioner of the Big 12, if Bob Bowlesby is still the commissioner of the Big 12, the Big 12 would be where the Pac-12 is today, and the Pac-12 would be where the Big 12 is today. The Pac-12 would be raiding or poaching or talking to the Big 12 about coming over and taking Big 12 schools. There's no doubt in my mind. One man has changed that. One man has changed all that. And to the chagrin of Oregon State, Washington State, if the Pac-12 does fall apart, those schools will suffer. And a lot of people thought it was going to be K-State and Iowa State would be the odd ones out. Where are they going to go? Mountain West. Now the talk is, well, where's Washington State and Oregon State going to go? Mountain West. Isn't that crazy how things have been flipped upside down because of one man's aggressiveness and another league's ineptitude? I'll take it one step further. Brett Yarmark and the Big 12 actually approached the Pac-12 about merging. And the Pac-12 said no. The presidents of the Pac-12, it's just not their commissioner. He's trying to do what the presidents tell him to do, right? He works for the presidents, but he can be the ultimate leader, gather the information, say, guys, this is what we need to do. And the Big 12 presidents, chancellors and everybody else, they trust Brett Yarmark already. And how could you not with what he's accomplished? They understand that we've got to be aggressive. We've got to be ready to make moves to solidify our positioning in college sports. And the Pac-12 apparently thinks they were able to rest on their laurels. And they kept kicking the can down the road with their media rights deal. And why did that happen? Because the Big 12 beat them to the punch. I don't know if the Pac-12 is going to be able to stay together or not. I don't know if Arizona is still going to go, if they're going to go to the Big 12 alone And the Pac-12 will have 8 schools, and Oregon will stay to keep it together, and then they'll join with San Diego State and a few Mountain West schools and form a conference of 10 or 12 or 16. I don't know. And honestly, I'm to the point where I don't even care about what happens to the Pac-12. Because the Pac-12 was making fun of the Big 12. All these other people across the country are making fun of the Big 12. They're beaten up and basically just saying, oh, ha, ha, the Big 12 messed up, and they were reactive, and they sat on their hands. They didn't do anything. And you know what? That was all fair criticism. But now the shoe's on the other foot. And somehow the narrative by people is that now the Big 12 is being a little unruly, or the Big 12 is being too aggressive, or the Big 12 is pouncing and taking advantage of the situation. And that is a bunch of horse bleep. The Big 12 is simply doing what the SEC, the Big Ten, and other conferences have done for years. It's taking care of themselves and having a vision of the future. So don't blame the Big 12 for the Pac-12's ineptitude. Don't blame the Big 12 for the lack of vision by the presence of the Pac-12. Think about how many times the Pac-12 could have been in much better situation had they just simply made a decision. The Pac-12 is the ultimate reactive conference. It used to be them and the Big 12. Now they're on their own island. The Pac-12 could have had Texas, Oklahoma had they been more aggressive. According to various reports years ago, they did not pull the trigger. They weren't aggressive enough. They could have called some of the other Big 12 schools that were vulnerable. They did not do that. They then could have merged with the Big 12 and formed a big conference together. They did not do that. Why? Because they thought they were better than the Big 12? Well, guess what? Is the Big 12 better than the Pac-12? If the Pac-12 or whatever way it ends up being and how it if it stays together, let's say no more schools leave, is the Pac-12 a better conference than the Big 12? They might have a brand name or two that you like Oregon. Arizona's not bad, but it's definitely not better than the Big 12. Are they similar? Maybe. Big 12 have more members. Okay, does that make the Big 12 automatically better because it was more members? Not necessarily. But there's this snobbiness out west from various schools, and I think Colorado got sick of it, that our stuff don't stink out here. And the real kick in the butt, much like it happened to the Big 12 when Texas, Oklahoma, under Bob Bowlesby's watch, departed secretly, and it was a shock, the same thing happened with USC and UCLA to the Big 10 under the Pac-12's watch. And if you really want to make this simple, the Pac-12 changed commissioners, the Big 12 changed commissioners, and the Big 12 made the much better hire, and that's why the Big 12 is in way better shape right now than the Pac-12. It's called leadership. Simple as that. It's called leadership. The Big 12 has, for the first time in many years, a true leader. The Pac-12 right now is just scrambling to keep things together. And they might luck out. They might be able to keep it together. And they very well might keep it together because of one man. But he's not the commissioner. And that's the Arizona State president, Mike Crow. Here's the latest. Or at least not that's the latest, but here's something here. Well, I did have it. Let me update it. This is going to continue to go. One person says out here, a media sports writer, let's get one thing straight. If the Pac-12 stays together, it is a weak league with a bad media deal whose long-term future is very shaky. That does not change. Arizona being held in by the board is a recipe for problems. Pac-12 CEO group meeting is underway now. All 9 of the remaining universities have confirmed their present chancellors are in the meeting. They are meeting with the intent to sign the grant of rights. Why would Arizona do that? I don't understand why Oregon would do it. Here's another one. If you want a whole other subject for another day, there's been discussion now. This posted by Jason Shear. There's been a discussion of the Pac-12 and ACC saving each other through a merger. Dear Lord, the Big 12 already presented you with that option, and you said no. That's how desperate the Pac-12 is. They refused to merge with schools closer to them, and now they're going to maybe merge with the ACC? What the hell is wrong with them out there? Now, granted, I think that's not going to happen. Expansion, also part of the Pac-12's meeting today. Okay, so hey, our conference is going to die last night. Now, this morning, we're going to somehow keep it together thanks to the Arizona Board of Regents not allowing Arizona to go on their own and making it a teamed-up deal, and Arizona State doesn't want to go. So we're going to hold Arizona hostage. So they're going to stay. We're going to have nine. Now let's start talking about how we can grow this league. Come on, SMU. Come on, San Diego State. Come on in to this rock-solid conference called the Pac-10, 12, whatever the hell we are now. Pac-9. Listen, I don't think there can be anybody happier in the world today than the University of Colorado. They got to be sitting here going, thank God we got out of that train wreck. Like I said, maybe the Pac-12 keeps it together. I'm not going to predict they will or they won't. Because we should learn, everybody wrote off the Big 12 to be dead, and the Big 12 proved that they weren't. They rose from the ashes. The Pac-12 could very well do that. I think the question that some people have is, okay, you avoid the death sentence now, but how long does the Pac-12 survive? And you could even technically say, how long does the Big 12 survive? I mean, the Big 12 does have a super gigantic brand name. So there's no Notre Dame. There's no Ohio State. There's no Alabama. There's no Georgia. There's no Clemson. There's no Oklahoma or Texas now. So you could sit here and say, you know what? Big 12 is in better position than maybe the ACC. They are more unified, it seems, obviously, than the Pac-12 the ACC. They're third in the pecking order. That seems solid. But all it would take would be for the Big Ten or the SEC to grab somebody away from the Big 12 and change the whole narrative again, right? So that's why you need a proactive, aggressive commissioner, and you need presidents willing to make tough decisions and give the permission to a commissioner to go get other teams and be proactive and try to build your league in various ways. Adding schools that fit, that's a key. Branding, marketing, promotions, so forth and so on. Now, there's new information coming out. Tons of rumors going on. Sources indicating that the Pac-12 is unlikely to land the plane this morning and get its media rights deals signed on this call today. Multiple variables at play, including 11th-hour Big Ten push for Oregon and Washington. Everything remains fluid. So, wait a minute. There's reports that last night, Oregon and Washington may go to the Big Ten. Then reports this morning, the Big Ten's really not all about Oregon and Washington. Now we're sitting here talking about the Big Ten is now pushing for Oregon and Washington. Who do you believe? I have no idea. And thus, that's going to bring us to the conclusion of the show. We'll have more on Monday. Until then, enjoy the league that you have with the 13 schools. Well, there's 14 this year. OU, Texas leave after this year. Add in Colorado. As it sits now, ladies and gentlemen, if you want a quick summary, all we know for sure is that the Big 12 will have at least 13 schools next year. That's what we know. Arizona sounds like really wants to come, but might be held against their will right now because Arizona State and the Board of Regents in Arizona. So, we will continue to watch the world turn when it comes to conference realignment. There's a soap opera called As the World Turns. I remember that growing up. My mom watched it from time to time. And we will enjoy the Royals going for their 7th win in a row tonight. And KU men's basketball playing in Puerto Rico tomorrow. K-State men's basketball team is making a trip to Israel and playing games over there coming up later on in August. So, we're getting closer. What was it? I think it's 28 days until KU opens the season in football on a Friday night, which you know how much we love college football on a Friday night. That should be just high school football night, but it is what it is. By the way, rainfall total, inch 60 Simpson, inch in Beloit, an inch over in the Downs area. Have a great day, everyone. And Your guess is about as good as mine nowadays with this conference realignment. I guess what we could just do is chill out and let the chips fall where they may, right? What a fascinating situation. And sadly, as we said many times before, the fans are the ones that ultimately lose out.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.